The Pilgrim's Progress, Chapter 8. When we left Christian and Hopeful last time, they had been trying to survive a flood that they fell into by wandering off the way, a way that seemed easy, that was alongside the way, and they've struggled through the floodwaters the whole day trying to get back to the little bridge or the stile, and they became very weary, and they fell asleep in a place that was out of the water as the waters receded. And we resume. Now there was, not far from the place where they lay, a castle, called Doubting Castle, the owner whereof was Giant Despair, and it was in his grounds that they were now sleeping. Wherefore he, getting up in the morning early, and walking up and down in his fields, caught Christian and Hopeful asleep in his grounds. Then with a grim and surly voice he bid them awake, and asked them whence they were, and what they did in his grounds. They told him they were pilgrims, and that they had lost their way. Then said the giant, "You have this night trespassed on me, by trampling in and lying on my grounds, and therefore you must go along with me." So they were forced to go, because he was stronger than they, and they also had but little to say, for they knew themselves to be in a fault. The giant therefore drove them before him, and put them into his castle, in a very dark dungeon, nasty and stinking to the spirit of these two men, and here they lay from Wednesday morning till Saturday night, without one bit of bread or drop of drink or light or any to ask how they did. They were therefore here in evil case, and were far from friends and acquaintance. Now in this place Christian had double sorrow, because 'twas through his unadvised haste that they were brought into this distress. Now Giant Despair had a wife, and her name was Diffidence. So when he had gone to bed, he told his wife what he had done, to wit, that he had taken a couple of prisoners and cast them into his dungeon for trespassing on his grounds. Then he asked her also what he had best to do further to them. And she asked him what they were, whence they came, and whither were they bound, and he told her. And she counseled him that when he arose in the morning, he should beat them without any mercy. So when he arose, he getteth him a grievous crab-tree cudgel, and goes down into the dungeon to them, and there first falls to rating of them as if they were dogs, although they gave him never a word of distaste. Then he falls upon them, and beats them fearfully in such sort that they were not able to help themselves, or to turn them upon the floor. This done, he withdraws and leaves them there to condole their misery and to mourn under their distress. So all that day they spent the time in nothing but sighs and bitter lamentations. The next night she was talking with her husband about them further, and understanding that they were yet alive, did advise him to counsel them to make away themselves. So when morning was come, he goes to them in a surly manner as before, and perceiving them to be very sore with the stripes he had given them the day before, he told them that since they were never like to come out of that place, their only way would be forthwith to make an end of themselves, either with knife, halter, or poison. "For why," said he, "should you choose life, seeing as attended with so much bitterness?" But they desired him to let them go. But with that he looked ugly upon them, and rushing to them had doubtless made an end of them himself, but that he fell into one of his fits, for he sometimes in sunshine weather fell into fits, and lost for a time the use of his hand. Wherefore he withdrew and left them as before to consider what to do. Then did the prisoners consult between themselves, whether 'twas best to take his counsel or no, and thus they began to discourse. "Brother," said Christian, "what shall we do? The life that we now live is miserable. For my part, I know not whether 'tis best to live thus or to die out of hand. My soul chooses strangling rather than life, and the grave is more easy for me than this dungeon. Shall we be ruled by the giant?" Hopeful said, "Indeed, our present condition is dreadful, and death would be far more welcome to me than thus forever to abide. But yet let us consider. The lord of the country to which we are going has said, 'You shall do no murder, and not to another man's person, much more than we are forbidden to take his counsel to kill ourselves. Besides, he that kills another can but commit murder upon his body. But for the one who kills himself, it is to kill body and soul at once. And moreover, my brother, you talk of ease in the grave, but have you forgotten the hell whither for certain the murderers go? For no murderer has eternal life, and so forth. And let us consider again that all the law is not in the hand of giant despair. Others, so far as I can understand, have been taken by him, as well we know, and yet have escaped out of his hands. Who knows but that God, who made the world, may cause that giant despair may die, or that in some time or other he may forget to lock us in, or but he may in short time have another of his fits before us, and may lose the use of his limbs. And if ever that should come to pass again, for my part, I am resolved to pluck up the heart of a man, and to try my utmost to get under his hand. I was a fool that I did not try to do it before. But, however, my brother, let's be patient and endure a while. The time may come that may give us a happy release, but let us not be our own murderers. With these words, Hopeful at present did moderate the mind of his brother. So they continued together in the dark that day in their sad and doleful condition. Well, towards evening, the giant goes down into the dungeon again to see if his prisoners had taken his counsel. But when he came there, he found them alive, and truly alive was all. For now, what for want of bread and water, by reason of the wounds they received when he beat them, they could do little but breathe. But I say he found them alive, at which he fell into a grievous rage and told them that seeing they had disobeyed his counsel, it would be worse with them than if they had never been born. At this they trembled greatly, and I think that Christian fell into a swoon. But coming a little to himself again, they renewed their discourse about the giant's counsel, and whether they had best take it or not. Now, Christian again seemed to be foredoing it, but Hopeful made his second reply as follows. My brother, said he, remember you not how valiant you have been heretofore? Apollyon could not crush thee, nor could all that you did hear or see or feel in the valley of the shadow of death. What hardship, terror, and amazement have you already gone through, and are you now ready for nothing but fear? You see that I am in the dungeon with thee, a far weaker man by nature than you are. Also, this giant has wounded me as well as you, and has also cut off the bread and water from my mouth, and with you I mourn without the light. But let's exercise a little more patience. Remember how you played the man at Vanity Fair, and was neither afraid of the chain nor cage, nor yet of bloody death? Wherefore let us, at least to avoid the shame that becomes not a Christian to be found in, bear up with patience as well as we can. Now night being come again, and the giant and his wife being in bed, she asked him concerning the prisoners, and if they had taken his counsel, to which he replied, they are sturdy rogues. They choose rather to bear all hardships than to make away themselves. And then she said, take them to the castle yard tomorrow, and show them the bones and skulls of those you have already dispatched, and make them believe ere a week comes to an end, you will tear them in pieces, as you have done their fellows before them. So when the morning came, the giant goes to them again, and takes them to the castle yard, and shows them as his wife had bidden him. These, said he, were pilgrims as you are, once, and they trespassed in my grounds, as you have done, and when I thought fit, I tore them in pieces, and so within 10 days I will do you. Go, let you down to your den again. And with that he beat them all the way hither. They lay therefore all day on Saturday in a lamentable case as before. Now when night was come, and when Mrs. Diffidence and her husband the giant were got to bed, they began to renew their discourse of their prisoners, and withal the old giant wondered that he could neither by his blows nor counsel bring them to an end. And with that his wife replied, I fear, said she, that they live in hope that some will come to relieve them, or that they have picklocks about them, by the means of which they hope to escape. And say you so, my dear, said the giant, I will therefore search them in the morning. Well, on Saturday about midnight, they began to pray, and continued in prayer till almost break of day. Now, a little before it was day, good Christian, as one half amazed, broke out in this passionate speech. What a fool, quoth he, am I, thus to lie in a stinking dungeon, when I may as well walk at liberty. I have a key in my bosom, called Promise, that I am persuaded open any lock in Doubting Castle. Then said Hopeful, that's good news, brother. Pluck it out of thy bosom and try. Then Christian pulled it out of his bosom and began to try at the dungeon door. whose bolt, as he turned the key, gave back, and the door flew open with ease, and Christian and Hopeful both came out. Then he went to the outward door that leads into the castle yard, and with his key opened that door also. After, he went to the iron gate, for that must be open too. But that lock went very hard, yet the key did open it. Then they thrust open the gate to make their escape with speed. But that gate, as it opened, made such a creaking that it wakened Giant Despair, who, hastily rising to pursue his prisoners, felt his limbs to fail, for his fits took him again, so that he could by no means go after them. Then they went on, and came to the king's highway again, and so they were safe, because they were out of his jurisdiction. Now when they had gone over the stile, they began to contrive with themselves what they should do at that stile to prevent those that should come after from falling into the hands of Giant Despair. So they consented to erect a pillar, and to engrave on the side thereof this sentence, "Over this stile is a way to Doubting Castle, which is kept by Giant Despair, who despises the king of the celestial country, and seeks to destroy his holy pilgrims. Many, therefore, have followed after, and read what was written, and escaped the danger. This done, they sang as follows. Out of the way we went, and then we found that what 'twas to tread upon forbidden ground, and let them that come after have a care, lest heedlessness makes them as we to fare, lest they for trespassing his prisoners are, whose castles doubting, and whose names despair." They went then till they came to the Delectable Mountains, which mountains belonged to the lord of that hill, of which we have spoken before. So they went up to the mountains to behold the gardens and the orchards, the vineyards and the fountains of water, where they drank and washed themselves and did freely eat of the vineyards. Now there was on top of those mountains shepherds feeding their flocks, and they stood by the highway side. The pilgrims therefore went to them, and leaning upon their staves, it is common with weary pilgrims, when they stand, to walk with any by the way, they ask, "Whose Delectable Mountains are these, and whose be the sheep that feed upon them?" And the shepherd said, "These mountains are Emmanuel's land, and they are within sight of his city, and the sheep are also his, and he laid down his life for them." "Is this the way to the celestial city?" said Christian. Shepherd said, "You are just in your way." And Christian said, "How far is it there?" "Too far for any, but those that shall get there indeed." "Is the way safe or dangerous?" "Safe for those for whom it is to be safe, but transgressors shall fall therein." Christian said, "Is there in this place any relief for pilgrims that are weary and faint in the way?" And the shepherd said, "The Lord of these mountains has given us a charge not to be forgetful to entertain strangers. Therefore the good of the place is even before you." I saw also in my dream that when the shepherds perceived they were wayfaring men, they also put questions to them, to which they made answer as in other places, as, "Whence came you, and how got you into the way, and by what means have you so persevered therein?" For but a few of them that began to come hither to show their face on these mountains. But when the shepherds heard their answers, being pleased therewith, they looked very lovingly upon them and said, "Welcome to the Delectable Mountains." The shepherds, I say, whose names were Knowledge, Experience, Watchful, and Sincere, took them by the hand and had them to their tents and made them partake of that which was ready at present. They said, moreover, "We would that you would stay here a while to be acquainted with us, and yet more to solace yourself with the good of these Delectable Mountains." Then they told him them that they were content to stay. So they went to their rest that night, because it was very late. Then I saw in my dream that in the morning the shepherds called up Christian and Hopeful to walk with them upon the mountains. And so they went forth with them and walked a while, having a pleasant prospect on every side. Then said the shepherds one to another, "Shall we show these pilgrims some wonders?" So when they had concluded to do it, they had them first to the top of a hill called Error, which was very steep on the further side, and bid them look down to the bottom. So Christian and Hopeful looked down and saw at the bottom several men dashed all to pieces by a fall that they had from the top. Then said Christian, "What means this?" And the shepherds answered, "Have you not heard of them that were made to err by hearkening unto Hymenaeus and Philetus, as concerning the faith of the resurrection of the body? They answered, yes. Then said the shepherds, those that you see lie dashed in pieces at the bottom of this mountain are they, and they have continued to this day unburied, as you see, for an example for others to take heed how they clamber too high, or how they come too near to the brink of this mountain. Then I saw that they had them on the top of another mountain, and the name of that is Caution, and bid them look afar off. And when they did, they perceived, as they thought, several men walking up and down among the tombs that were there. And they perceived that the men were blind, because they stumbled sometimes upon the tombs, and because they could not get out from among them. Then said Christian, what means this? The shepherds then answered, did you not see a little below these mountains a stile that led into a meadow on the left hand of the way? They answered, yes. Then said the shepherds, from that stile there goes a path that leads directly to Doubting Castle, which is kept by Giant Despair. And these men, pointing to them among the tombs, came once on pilgrimage, as you do now, even till they came to that same stile. And because the right way was rough in that place, they chose to go out of it into that meadow, and there were taken by Giant Despair, and kept in Doubting Castle, where after they had been a while been kept in the dungeon, he did at last put out their eyes, and led them among these tombs, where he has left them to wander to this very day, that the saying of the wise man might be fulfilled, he that wanders out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. Then Hopeful and Christian looked one upon another, with tears gushing out, but yet said nothing to the shepherds. Then I saw in my dream that the shepherds had them to another place in a bottom, where was a door in the side of a hill, and they opened the door and bid them look in. They looked in, therefore, and saw that within it was very dark and smoky, and they also thought that they heard there a rumbling noise as of fire, and a cry of some tormented, and that they smelt the scent of brimstone. Then said Christian, what means this? The shepherds told him, this is a byway to hell, a way that hypocrites go in at, namely such as sell their birthright with Esau, such as sell their master with Judas, such as blaspheme the gospel with Alexander, and that lie and dissemble with Ananias and Sapphira his wife. Then said Hopeful to the shepherds, I perceive that these had on them, even every one, a show of pilgrimage, as we have now, had they not? Shepherd said, yes, and held it a long time, too. Hopeful said, how far might they go on pilgrimage in their day, since they, notwithstanding, were thus miserably cast away? Shepherd said, some further, and some not so far, as these mountains. Then said the pilgrims one to another, we have need to cry to the strong for strength. Aye, said the shepherd, and you will have need to use it when you have it, too. By this time the pilgrims had a desire to go forwards, and the shepherds a desire that they should. So they walked together towards the end of the mountains. Then said the shepherds one to another, let us here show to the pilgrims the gates of the celestial city, if they have skill to look through our perspective glass. The pilgrims then lovingly accepted the motion. So they had them to the top of a high hill called Clear, and gave them the glass to look. Then they essayed to look, but the remembrance of that last thing that the shepherd had showed them made their hands shake, by means of which impediment they could not look steadily through the glass. Yet they thought they saw something like the gate, and also some of the glory of the place. Then they went away and sang this song. Thus by shepherds secrets are revealed, which from all other men are kept concealed. Come to the shepherds then, if you would see things deep, things hid, and that mysterious be. When they were about to depart, one of the shepherds gave them a note of the way. Another of them bid them beware of the flatterer. The third bid them take heed that they sleep not upon the enchanted ground. And the fourth bid them Godspeed. So I woke from my dream, and I slept and dreamed again, and saw the same two pilgrims going down the mountains along the highway toward the city. Now a little below these mountains, on the left hand, lies the country of Conceit, from which country there comes into the way in which the pilgrims walked a little crooked lane. Here, therefore, they met with a very brisk lad that came out of that country, and his name was Ignorance. So Christian asked him from what parts he came and whether he was going. Ignorance said, "Sure, I was born in the country that lies off there, a little on the left hand, and I am going to the celestial city." Christian said, "But how do you think you can get in at the gate? For you may find some difficulty there." Ignorance said, "As other good people do," said he. "But what have you to show at the gate, that the gate should be open to you?" "I know my Lord's will," said Ignorance, "and I have lived a good life. I pay every man his own, I pray, fast, pay tithes, and give alms, and have left my country for whither I am going." "But," said Christian, "thou camest not in at the wicked gate that is at the head of this way. Thou camest in thither through that same crooked lane. Therefore, I fear, however you may think of yourself, when the reckoning day shall come, you will have laid to thy charge that you are a thief and a robber, instead of getting admittance into the city." "Gentlemen," said Ignorance, "you are utter strangers to me. I know you not. Be content to follow the religion of your country, and I will follow the religion of mine. I hope all will be well, and as for the gate that you talk of, all the world knows that that is a great way off our country. I cannot think that any men in all our parts do so much as know the way to it, nor need they matter whether they do or no, since we have, as you see, a fine, pleasant green lane that comes down from our country the next way into it." When Christian saw that the man was wise in his own conceit, he said to Hopeful whisperingly, "There is more hopes of a fool than of him," and said, "Moreover, when he that is a fool walks by the way, his wisdom fails him, and he says to everyone that he is a fool. What shall we talk further with him, or outgo him at present, and so leave him to think of what he has heard already, and then stop again for him afterwards, and see if by degrees we can do any good for him?" Then said Hopeful, "Let Ignorance a little while now muse on what is said, and let him not refuse good counsel to embrace, lest he remain still ignorant of what's the chiefest gain. God said, those that no understanding have, although he made them, him he will not save." Hopeful, he further added, "It is not good, I think, to say all to him at once. Let us pass him by, if you will. Talk to him anon, even as he is able to bear it." So they both went on, and Ignorance he came after. Now when they had passed him a little way, they entered into a very dark lane, where they met a man whom seven devils had bound with seven strong cords, and were carrying of him back to the door that they saw on the side of the hill. Now good Christian began to tremble, and so did Hopeful, his companion. Yet as the devils led away the man, Christian looked to see if he knew him. He thought he might be one Turnaway that dwelt in the town of Apostasy, but he did not perfectly see his face, for he did hang his head like a thief that is found. But being gone past, Hopeful looked after him and espied on his back a paper with the inscription, "Wanton Professor and Damnable Apostate." Then said Christian to his fellow, "Now I call to remembrance that which was told me of a thing that happened to a good man hereabout. The name of the man was Little Faith, but a good man, and he dwelt in the town of Sincere. The thing was this. At the entering in of this passage, there comes down from Broadway Gate a lane called Dead Man's Lane, so called because of the murders that are commonly done there. And this Little Faith, going on pilgrimage as we do now, chanced to sit down there and slept. There happened at that time to come down that lane from Broadway Gate three sturdy rogues, and their names were Faint Heart and Mistrust and Guilt, three brothers, and they espying Little Faith where he was, came galloping up with speed. Now the good man was just awakened from his sleep and was getting up to go on his journey. So they came up all to him and with threatening language bid him stand. At this Little Faith looked as white as a clout and had neither power to fight nor to fly. Then said Faint Heart, "Deliver your purse." But he, making no haste to do it, for he was loath to lose his money, Mistrust ran up to him, and thrusting his hand into his pocket, pulled out thence a bag of silver. Then he cried out, "Thieves! Thieves!" Without guilt, with a great club that was in his hand, struck Little Faith on the head, and with that blow felled him flat to the ground. Wherefore he lay bleeding as one that would bleed to death. All this while the thieves stood by, but at last they, hearing that some were upon the road, and fearing lest it should be one Great Grace that dwells in the city of Good Confidence, they betook themselves to their heels and let this good man to shift for himself. Now after a while, Little Faith came to himself, and getting up, made shift to scrabble on his way. This was the story. Hopeful said, "But did they take from him all that ever he had?" "No," said Christian. "The place where his jewels were, they never ransacked, so he still kept those. But as I was told, the good man was much afflicted for his loss, for the thieves got most of his spending money, which that which they had got not, as I said, were jewels. Also, he had a little odd money left, but scarce enough to bring him to his journey's end. No, if I was not misinformed, he was forced to beg as he went to keep himself alive, for his jewels he might not sell. But beg and to do what he could, he went, as we say, with many a hungry belly the most part of the rest of the way." Hopeful said, "But is it not a wonder that they got not from him his certificate, by which he was to receive his admittance to the celestial gate?" Christian said, "No, 'tis a wonder, but they got not that, though they missed it not through any good cunning of his, for he, being dismayed with their coming upon him, had neither power nor skill to hide anything, and 'twas more by good providence than by his endeavor that they missed of that sort of good thing." Hopeful said, "But it needs be a comfort to him that they got his jewel from him." "It might have been great comfort to him," said Christian, "had he used it as he should. But they that told him the story said that he made little use of it all the rest of the way, and that because of the dismay that he had in their taking away of his money. Indeed, he forgot it a great part of the rest of his journey, besides which, when at any time it came to his mind, he began to be comforted therewith, when he would fresh thoughts of his loss come up again upon him, and those thoughts would swallow up all." Hopeful said, "Alas, poor man! This could not be but a great grief unto him." "Grief," said Christian, "ah, a grief indeed. Would it not have been so to any of us, had we been used as he, to be robbed and wounded too, and that in a strange place as he was? 'Tis a wonder he did not die with grief, poor heart. I was told that he scattered almost all the rest of the way with nothing but doleful and bitter complaints, telling also to all that overtook him, or that he overtook in the way as he went, where he was robbed, and how, and who they were that did it, and what he lost, and how he was wounded, and that he hardly escaped with his life." Hopeful says, "But 'tis a wonder that his necessities did not put him upon selling or pawning some of his jewels, that he might have wherewith to relieve himself on his journey." Christian said, "You talk like one upon whose head is the shell to this very day, for what should he pawn them? Or to whom should he sell them? In all that country where he was robbed, his jewels were not much accounted of, nor did he want that relief from which could from thence be administered to him. Besides, had his jewels been missing at the gate of the celestial city, he had, and that he knew well enough, been excluded from an inheritance there, and that would have been worse to him than the appearance and villainy of 10,000 thieves."